World of Radio. On this edition, monitoring the Falkland Islands situation. Another FCC bust in Miami. Coded messages from the Free Voice of Iran. Our radio kinset at Timre fights jamming. A free radio station in Europe, almost 4,000 meters high. And news about broadcasting developments in Australia, New Zealand, Bolivia, Brazil, and Libya. Like most international news stories, there is a shortwave angle to the Falkland Islands. Monitoring English broadcasts from Buenos Aires is not at all easy in North America, but you can try for Rye in English at 0100 GMT on 11710 and 9690 kilohertz every evening except Sunday, Monday by GMT. There's also an English broadcast on 11710 only at 2200 GMT from Rye, Buenos Aires. Insofar as the Organization of American States is involved, if you understand Spanish, you might want to listen to La Voz de la OEA, which is on the air Monday through Friday between 2345 and 2430 UTC via VOA facility on 15160, 11830, and 9640 kilohertz. You can hear broadcasts from Britain to the Falkland Islands, which are scheduled every Sunday between 2209 and 2245 GMT. I was listening to this last Sunday and found it very interesting indeed. It was a special edition, of course, with a message from Her Majesty's government to the Falklanders and the usual passing of messages from Falklanders abroad to Falklanders in the islands, but with a bit more urgency to them this time. The transmission is on two special frequencies, on the air only on Sundays between 2200 and 2245, 12,040 and 9915 kilohertz, both out of band. I was listening to 12040, which had a rather stronger signal than usual. That might mean that the BBC beefed up its transmitter power because of the situation there. And there was a call by someone in the government or in the opposition for BBC to expand its broadcast to the Falklands. So you might check those two frequencies around 2200 GMT on days other than Sundays, or listen to the BBC World Service for announcements about a possible expansion of their broadcasts. Hearing the Falkland Islands themselves is considerably more difficult. There is a shortwave transmitter on 2370 kilohertz, which has been regarded as just about the ultimate in DX, for North American listeners at least, and it has been heard when conditions are very favorable, usually during a solar disturbance. They are on the air around 0100 GMT. The exact sign-on and sign-off times vary, and the window for fade-in and fade-out also varies, depending on where you are. It's a little late in the season to be hearing them now in North America, but it wouldn't hurt to try. They might be broadcasting only in Spanish now, who knows? For what might turn out to be nostalgia's sake, we now present a feature on the Falkland Islands Broadcasting Service, prepared some months ago before the current situation by Adrian Peterson, originally broadcast on his DX program, Radio Monitors International.
This is the Falkland Islands Broadcasting Station, broadcasting on frequencies of 536 and 2370 kHz. Good evening, listeners. Here is a summary of this evening's program.
The Falkland Islands lie some 400 miles east of the bottom tip of South America. They were first discovered by the English sailor, Captain John Davies, in 1592. Almost 100 years later, in 1690, another English sailor, Captain John Strong, landed on the islands, and he named them Falkland in honor of Viscount Falkland in England. The first English settlers established a colony on the island in 1833. There are two large islands in the Falklands, East Falkland of 2,600 square miles and West Falkland of 2,000. In addition, there are some 200 smaller islands. The total population in the Falklands is just 2,000, and almost a half of these, almost 1,000, live in the main town, Port Stanley, on East Falkland. Recently, a new airport has been built near Port Stanley, and now there are flights once a week from Argentina. However, before the airport was constructed, mail came out by steamer once a month from Montevideo in Uruguay. The BBC has a special weekly program each Sunday for the Falkland Islands from 22:10 to 22:45 GMT. This can be heard on four different channels, from Ascension Island on 15,260 and from Great Britain on 12,040, 11,750 and 9,915 kilohertz.
As I indicated, Adrian prepared this some time ago, and in recent months, I am not aware that the BBC has been using 15260 or 11750 for this service. However, with the present situation, they could well begin using these frequencies. It certainly would make sense to relay the Falkland service from Ascension. The original two frequencies are direct from England.
Now, it is comparatively simple to listen to these programs, which are broadcast to the Falkland Islands. But it is another matter again to tune into the programs which are broadcast from the Falkland Islands. Radio broadcasting in the Falkland Islands began in the early 1950s. Two small communication transmitters of 250 watts each were used to carry news and information to the local residents in Port Stanley and to the isolated inhabitants on outlying islands. The two channels in use were 1,500 medium wave and 3,400 short wave. The station was on the air for about an hour each day. In 1954, two new transmitters were installed. A 5 kilowatt unit was used on the new medium wave channel 600 and a 500 watt unit on 625. There was also an increase in daily transmission hours. During the following year, the shortwave relay of the medium wave service was discontinued, and the channel for the 5 kilowatt medium wave outlet was adjusted to 585 kilohertz. In 1957, the 500 watt shortwave outlet was reactivated on another channel, 3,958 kilohertz. And if necessary, the 5 kilowatt medium wave transmitter could also be used for the shortwave service. Some additional channels on medium wave, as well as on shortwave, have also been used. In 1978, at the time of the airport construction, two new Rediphone Granger transmitters of 5 kilowatt were installed. One of these, suppressed to turn a half kilowatt, is used in the broadcast service on 2,370 kilohertz. This transmitter radiates through a lug periodic antenna on a beam of 320 degrees. The transmitter equipment is run by cable and wireless, and programming is supplied by the Falkland Islands Broadcasting Service. Since January 1 this year, a new QSL card has been in use. However, ample program details are required, and thus far, only four QSL cards have been issued. This station was logged by Victor Bunatilica in Colombo in 1972, and again quite recently at midnight 20 GMT with a fade-out 20 minutes later. The current schedule for FIBS is as follows. Daily, 1300 to 1500 and 2230 to 0130. Saturdays, 1300 to 1500 and again 2130 to 0130. And on Sunday, 2145 to midnight 30. Both channels carry the same programming in parallel. 5 kilowatt on 536 and 2.5 kilowatt approximately on 2370 kilohertz. For a few moments, we listen again to the Falkland Islands Broadcasting Service. This station identification has been made available to Radio Monitors International by the Finnish DX service of Box 40, S321 in Finland. and it is one of the many fascinating items on their new cassette, Latin America on the Air. Here again is the Falkland Islands Broadcasting Service.
This is the Falkland Islands Broadcasting Station, broadcasting on frequencies of 536 and 2370 kilohertz. Good evening, listeners. Here is a summary of this evening's program. In a few moments, the announcements, and these include one message to Shirley Knight at North Arm, 6:45 Sports Roundup, 7 o'clock BBC News, 7:15 the weather forecast and flight schedule, followed by special requests, 7:30 Dad's Army, 7:59 the financial news, 8:09 news about Britain, followed by Radio Newsreel, 8:30 the Stevie Wonder story, 9:30 book club, Mrs. Lirriper's lodgings, 9:45 music from the studio.
Well, thanks to Adrian Peterson for that feature on the Falkland Islands, prepared some time ago and which now, unfortunately, may be becoming out of date. As for one thing, the Argentine occupiers have declared Spanish the official language of Las Islas Malvinas. Another country which might vie for the title more British than the British is New Zealand, and it was one of the first countries to break off relations with Argentina. Radio New Zealand's own shortwave service has remained on the air past the deadline of April 1st. But apparently, the situation still has not been decided. Bruce Tindall in Houston, Texas, was listening to Radio New Zealand's midnight report at 1200 GMT on April 2nd. It said the foreign minister would be meeting with the head of the broadcasting corporation within a week to discuss the future of the shortwave service. They said the foreign minister had asked people, and Bruce wonders which people, while on a tour of the Pacific recently, how much use they made of the service, and found the answer not positive. He said he didn't think news of New Zealand road accidents was of sufficient interest to foreigners to warrant the continuation of the service at $180,000 New Zealand dollars per year. Bruce adds it sounds bad for the home team, but at least they've managed to stay on the air past the April 1st deadline feared earlier. Over in Australia, the pirate called radio CBN continues to broadcast. We have some news about it from Bob Padula. Its address, by the way, is 1 Browns Lane, B-R-O-W-N apostrophe S, North Sydney, New South Wales 2060. And as far as I know, radio CBN still hasn't been heard in North America. But their scheduling of future programs may make this possible if enough people check for it and if conditions are favorable. He says Radio CBN has announced its upcoming schedule. The daytime transmissions, local time, have now been deleted due to poor propagation within Australia. These have been replaced by morning and evening programs on alternate 3 weeks. There was a special Easter broadcast on the 10th of April at 1130 to 1200 GMT on 7400 kilohertz. And another one on April 25th at 1000 to 1030 GMT. Now, that one might be possible in North America, also on 7400. This is to be a special relay of the West German pirate Radio Telstar. And strangely enough, QSLs for that are available if reports are sent to this address, Radio Telstar, P.O. Box 4948, Arcata, California, 95521 USA, and 2 IRCs are required for the reply. In addition to this, there are regular broadcasts of Radio CBN scheduled for the 18th of April at 1000 to 1030 on 7400 kilohertz, then on the 15th of May at 2100 to 2130 GMT on 7435, the 13th of June at 1000 to 1030 on 7500, and the 3rd of July at 2100 to 2120 on 7435. Each of the regular broadcasts features DX tips compiled and presented by Jerry Richards. The station advises the power is 80 watts. Reports have been received from New Zealand and Europe, but none so far from North America. He says reception along the Eastern Australian seaboard for the special tests at 1000 and 2100 GMT was excellent. The audio and transmission quality are first class. Now, news about Radio CBN from Bob Padula. Now a couple of Latin American items. first from Emilio Pedro Porcenic in Argentina about Bolivia. He says Radio Norte in Montero now seems to have stabilized on 4935 kilohertz. It was formerly around 4938. They have an unusual program, Mondays at midnight 50 UTC. It's a religious program called La Hora Chiquitana,
the Chiquitan Hour.
It's in the Chiquitano language. He says the Chiquitania region is in the eastern part of Bolivia, in the department of Santa Cruz. The program is dedicated to the inhabitants of this region. This exotic language seems to be a mixture of Quechua and Guarani. On the air after 20 months of silence is Radio Fides in La Paz, Bolivia, since February 25th. Best reception on 4845 kilohertz around midnight UTC, while the frequency of 6155 is difficult to listen to because of a strong heterodyne. Emilio says he visited this station during a day excursion with other members of the Asociación de X del Litoral during February of 1980. At that time, the station studios were installed in the first floor of a Catholic school. And 5 months after their visit, the station was bombed and put off the air. That's July 17, 1980. Concerning Radio Nacional de Brazil, Robert F. Reinecker in Pennsylvania received this notation on his verification card. Thanks for the stamps. Enclosed are some Brazilian ones for your collection. Tape recordings are always welcome to our engineering staff, but unfortunately, at the present moment, we are not prepared to return them to senders. Otto Horvitz scans publications most DX listeners do not or may not even be aware of for information about international broadcasting. And he found this in the 13 September 1981 issue of Near East North Africa Report, number 2408, a translation of the clandestine station Free Voice of Iran's broadcast in Persian to Iran. Well, that was the date of the transmission I mentioned, not the date of publication. Attention, attention, coded messages to the Armed Combatants Communications Branch. Please record these messages, and after decoding them, inform the Supplies Branch. Resistance cell of Unit 44. The Storks are on their way. And then that was repeated. Resistance cells 19, 21, and 30. The chests of Shiraz, Isfahan, and Tabriz are ready. And that was repeated. Unit 51. The Friday Mosque, Range 2, is waiting. The sweets have been sent in a box. Unit 24. The flowers have blossomed. The apple boxes will be sent tomorrow. Units 12, 9, and 38, open the locks. The eagles will return to their nests. Pay attention to the general code numbers. 25, 34, 96, 071, 333. The lights are on. Over. Translation of Free Voice of Iran's broadcast on September 13th. Either passing some secret messages or very much wanting to appear to do so. Robert Horvitz also found this by Isabel Vishniak in Le Monde on the 10th of November, 1981. It was translated in Worldwide Report, Telecommunications Policy, Research and Development, number 193. At midnight on Sunday, 8 November, a new peripheral radio station, Radio Mont Blanc, began to broadcast from Italy to France. An initial experiment in monophony with a provisional wavelength of 103.5 megahertz. Radio Mont Blanc should broadcast 24 hours a day in stereophonic sound beginning Tuesday, November 10th. It was started by Gérald Stufel nearly 6 years ago. This private radio station, which has rather considerable backing, previously aimed its programs only at the Val d'Aosta, an autonomous region of Italy. Headed by Roland Dortin, who has a background in radio and television, the station, whose transmitter is particularly powerful, plans to cover an area as far as Lyon and even Valencia. Radio Mont Blanc has the highest transmitter in the world at 3,930 meters on the Italian slope of Mont Blanc at Trois-la-Tête. Construction of the antenna took 8 years and required 800 helicopter flights. Because of the cold and ice, guides and construction workers were able to work only a total of 180 days. The transmitter's power will come from three generators supplied with kerosene, 18,000 liters of which have been stored at Trois-la-Tête, a five-month supply. The antenna is protected from the wind, and gusts may reach 280 kilometers per hour, that's what it says, by a kind of hollow tower 10 meters high. However, the station's operation is by remote control from the Valdosta, because at that altitude, human presence is possible only 80 days a year. Radio Mont Blanc wants to be independent, international, or more precisely, multi-regional, and essentially French-speaking. Its main objectives are to ensure within an area of coverage divided by borders, which many deem to be artificial, to ensure the continuation of the French language and to respond to the information needs of regional listeners. According to its director, Roland Dantin, Radio Mont Blanc should be a radio of companionship and contact, a radio of dialogue, giving priority to technical assistance and renewed gaiety. Music will occupy 80% of all programming, information and services 20%. It will be a neighborly, close-by radio station, seeking to get away from any Parisianism and try to get men to communicate. It has 5 minutes of advertising per hour, which must respect the moral and political restrictions imposed in France and Switzerland in the audiovisual field. This advertising will involve only products available in both countries. Radio Mont Blanc is governed by Italian law. As far as France and Switzerland are concerned, there is a legal vacuum for the time being. The promoters hope to enjoy the de facto status of certain peripheral stations, as Europe No. 1 has for 20 years. To date, the International Telecommunication Union, whose headquarters are in Geneva, has not assigned it any frequency. Whatever the case, station officials, who are careful not to interfere with the broadcasts of Lyon stations, do not seem to have the slightest fear of any jamming. Which certainly does have a fear of jamming is Radio 15 de Septembre, the anti-Nicaraguan government clandestine. Here's a report from Steve Bonadio in Watertown, New York, dated March 29th. He says the boys in Managua have done it again. Radio 15 de Septembre is being jammed. It started on their regular evening transmission, 0300 to 0400 Zulu, at 0309 GMT, March 30th. The operators of Radio 15 de Septembre somehow found out about this, perhaps by telephone network in the nation of origin, most likely Honduras, and by 5 minutes later, 0314, they shifted frequency to 5570, 5 kilohertz up from 5565, where they've been until then. The jamming followed. They made a big jump up to around 5598. Quickly in came the jamming. A big jump was made to around 5545 kilohertz. It took a while, but the jammers found them. Throughout the hour-long transmission, various frequencies were tried. For example, 5525, 5600, 5545, 5590. Various frequencies between 5525 and 5600 kilohertz. For a while, around 0325 Zulu, Radio 15 de Septembre stayed on 5530 and let itself be jammed. Later, around 0340, they settled on 5565. Their own frequency, and let it rain down upon them. Steve says these frequencies are approximate because they were changing almost too quickly to keep up with, and he doesn't have a frequency readout. The transmissions were still going past 0400 GMT. He didn't know if it was because of the jamming, but he thinks most of the shows are taped beforehand. The jamming would slowly inch in on a frequency when the Radio 15 de Septembre transmitter changed frequency. The jammer would have a loud hum modulation, and it would slowly creep in on the Radio 15 signal in precise steps, the same way every time. This does suggest what type of jamming transmitter the Nicaraguans are using. Tony W. Campbell in Waynesboro, Virginia, was listening at exactly the same time, and he says from 0309 to 0328, he counted the radio station and the jammer making 19 frequency changes. The 20th one put them in the clear for a while. That was as low as 5505 kilohertz. They were on the air until 0440 GMT this time, and he counted a total of 22 frequency changes.
at Radio Quince de Septiembre made in a space of 27 minutes. Shortwave broadcasts into Cuba were the subject of a federal crackdown. That's the headline in a Tampa Tribune story of March 27th, forwarded to us by John Santosuoso. Field inspectors of the U.S. Federal Communications Commission, resuming a battle against illegal shortwave broadcasts to Cuba, visited three suspected transmitter sites in the Miami area Thursday night and announced they would serve notices of fines on the owners of the homes. Richard M. Smith, the chief of the FCC's Field Operations Bureau, and Joseph P. Casey, the chief of Smith's Investigations Branch, said the late-night inspections followed several months of work by FCC employees in Miami and Fort Lauderdale. The monitoring teams used sophisticated radio direction-finding equipment to pinpoint the sources of the alleged illegal broadcasts. According to Casey, the field inspectors discovered a shortwave transmitter at one house Thursday night and a shortwave antenna at the second. The inspectors were to return to the third house, found to be unoccupied Thursday night. The names of the owners were not immediately available. Casey said the investigation had identified the three houses as sites that were used at different times by broadcasters identifying themselves as the voice of Alpha 66. Alpha 66 is an organization of anti-Castro Cuban exiles whose goal is to foment revolution in Cuba. The Spanish-language broadcasts on shortwave amateur radio frequencies were aimed at Cuba and were clearly illegal under U.S. law and international treaties, according to Casey. He said the FCC will issue notices of liability to each of the homeowners for a $750 fine. They'll then have 30 days to contest the fine, after which the commission will make a final decision on whether the notices will be enforced. If the fine is not paid or if the illegal broadcasts resume, Smith said the FCC will have the option of building a case for criminal prosecution through the U.S. Attorney's Office in Miami. A new U.S. attorney will likely be in office in Miami by the time the administrative procedures run their course. Officials were upset last year when the current U.S. attorney dismissed the charges against a man who had been the target of the FCC's most exhaustive effort ever to prosecute an alleged illegal Cuban broadcaster on criminal charges. Adley W. Wampler, whose resignation as U.S. attorney becomes effective Saturday, and that would have been April 3rd, dismissed the charges as part of a plea bargaining agreement. FCC officials in Florida subsequently charged the decision was based on politics and a desire not to antagonize Miami's large Cuban community. Wampler denied politics played any role, saying the defendant had no criminal record, was charged with a misdemeanor, and probably would not have been convicted by a jury in Miami. FCC officials agreed it may be difficult to secure a criminal conviction from a jury in a city filled with Cuban exiles. However, they noted each nation of the world is responsible for enforcing broadcast rules within its borders to avoid destructive interference to stations in neighboring countries. Meanwhile, our correspondent in Miami says a spokesman for Alpha 66 blamed Castro pressure on the U.S. government for the crackdown, though the FCC stated it was responding to the complaints of radio amateurs about interference in the 40-meter band. A spokesman for Alpha 66 vowed to continue broadcasting, perhaps from outside the U.S. territory. And our correspondent says it's not entirely clear whether Alpha 66 was the only station actually involved in this bust. There may have been others at the three locations. But in any event, for the next few days, neither Alpha 66 nor the other regulars were heard on the air. Listening to World of Radio, a program about our dynamic international broadcasting medium. Heard on WRNO worldwide every Sunday at 2330 GMT on 11955. Repeated Tuesdays at 1900 on 15420. The World of Radio address is Box 6287, Knoxville, Tennessee, 37914. This is Glenn Hauser.
Glenn Hauser with World of Radio. addition, another new American shortwave station on the way. Some tips for good listening in the next few days. Broadcasting news from Canada, Ghana, Monaco, New Zealand, Norway, and Louisville. We'll listen to Radio Solidarity. News about Radio West and, in Canada, Shortwave Horizons. How to order the directory of World Band Radio. And a radio hoax in Greece. Another new private American shortwave station is on the way. It'll be in Knoxville, Tennessee. The project is headed by Marvin Steffens, the man who put KGEI San Francisco on the air originally and later sold it to the Far East Broadcasting Company. The new station is being put on the air in connection with the 1982 World's Fair in Knoxville, Tennessee, which opens May 1st and runs through October 31st. The station is planned to continue on the air after the fair closes, with its main target area being Latin America. Temporary studios are now being built in the Canadian Pavilion at the World's Fair. At first, the station will not have its own transmitter, but will use several hours a day, 6 days a week, of time on WRNO. The studio itself may not be ready by May 1st. It is hoped that the programming could begin by May 15th at the latest. A suitable transmitter site in the Knoxville, Tennessee area is now being sought. Once it is secured, the station will apply for FCC permission and, as soon as possible, begin building its own transmitter, which is expected to be a Harris 100 kilowatt unit and with a similar antenna as well to the system used by WRNO. This might be on the air from Knoxville by late August or early September. Whenever it goes on the air, if it goes on the air before the end of the fair, plans are for the programming to be simulcast both on the new station and WRNO. But the new station would continue with its own programming, which would be commercial with a Christian element after the conclusion of the fair. Of course, we'll keep you informed on further developments here on World of Radio. Radio New Zealand managed to stay on the air beyond the feared close-down date of April 1st. However, its situation has remained very much in doubt, and the date of April 30th is now being mentioned as a possible date for the permanent close-down of Radio New Zealand's shortwave service. So I suggest you try monitoring 15485 kilohertz. For the 1200 GMT closing newscast, for instance, they sign off around 12:15 to find out if Radio New Zealand is, in fact, about to go off the air or perhaps already has. A number of people have written to the Prime Minister of New Zealand, as has been suggested, protesting the proposed closure of Radio New Zealand shortwave service, and I'm glad to report that Mr. R.D. Muldoon, the Prime Minister, has been courteous enough to reply to some of these letters or telegrams, replying in kind. However, he has made no commitments. For instance, Tom Laskowski of South Bend, Indiana, wrote to the Prime Minister and received a brief note in reply on his own letterhead, saying he was acknowledging receipt of the letter and appreciated receiving the comments of the listener and had drawn them to the attention of his colleague, Dr. the Honorable I.J. Shearer, Minister of Broadcasting. But no commitments made. On 2 days per year, Radio Moscow World Service breaks its usual programming pattern and presents a live broadcast, although I'm sure it's carefully planned, covering the Great Parade in Red Square. One of those days, of course, is May Day. The parade coverage usually starts around 0600 GMT on many frequencies of Radio Moscow World Service, as well as coverage in Russian and Chinese. You might find that interesting to tune into. Around April 1st, Radio Moscow World Service made a number of changes in its basic programming pattern as well, after a relatively long period of stability. They have changed the times of a number of their regular features and changed the mix of talk to music in the first and second half of each hour. I heard them announce that one of their better programs, Round About the Soviet Union, is now on at the following times, Saturdays and repeated Tuesdays. GMT, 0211, 0511, 1211, and 2211. You'll note those times are not 6 hours apart as the former rotation pattern called for. Of course, many other stations in the Soviet world have special programming for May 1st. London Radio Peking, which has a May Day program planned, including Chinese workers' songs of the past half century. That's in its English programming. Some other Radio Peking programs in early May, as publicized in Review of International Broadcasting, on May 2nd, Music Album, a new series on national minority music, as well as listeners' letterbox about the Qingdao Brewery and what flowers are grown in China and the average number of children in a Chinese family. China in Construction on May 5th is about bridges on the Yangtze River. Culture in China on May 6th is about the Yuan Dynasty drama. It's the seventh in a series on classical Chinese literature. Clear Channel's columnist in the Review of International Broadcasting, Ken McHarg, reminds us that the final week of April brings a number of special programs on WHAS 840 in Louisville in connection with the Kentucky Derby, which is run on May 1st. For instance, on April 28th around 5 p.m. is the Great Steamboat Race, with three of the remaining paddle wheel steamers racing on the Ohio River. Thursday or Friday evening, Matt's Here will be broadcast from the celebrity party, with interviews coming from many well-known people in town for the race. And on May 1st, the actual two-minute run for the roses, with Kaywood Ledford's call repeated many times during the evening. And throughout the week, WHAS 840 in Louisville will have many features about the Derby and many reruns of old events. Ken McHarg says it's an exciting week, offering different listening. Now let's take a look at the schedule for Radio Nacional's Sunday specials from Brazil. On April 25th, the hits of Carmen Miranda. On May 2nd, the contribution of the Indian to Brazilian culture. On May 9th, Brazilian country music. On May 16th, Brazilian culinary arts. May 23rd, Roberto Carlos, the king of Brazilian popular music. And on May 30th, Brazilian fauna. This can be heard at 0200 GMT Monday on 17830 and 15290. Roger Bryce. Thanks to Ian Dorridge in Montreal and Ken Wong in Vancouver, we have press reports that Don Herron is quitting his post as host of the Morningside Show on CBC Radio as of May 28th. He's going to pursue other interests. He says it's been a very rich, rewarding 5 years and probably the most important thing I've done. But I want to sleep in every day and get back into shape. Herron, who is 57, is the only Canadian radio performer to spend 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, on the air. He puts in an additional 15 hours a day to research his subject. Morningside senior producer Robert Crowell says he has a good reputation in the industry for being a conscientious interviewer. He insists on reading about 4 books a week before meeting an author on the show. Herron said one of the reasons he's leaving is to have time to write a planned biography. Herron earned $68,000 when he started on Morningside in 1977. 5 years later, he was making $73,000, hosting a show that boasts 1 million listeners across Canada. And of course, this press report neglects to mention that Morningside is carried, the first 2 hours anyway, on shortwave via the Northern Quebec service, 11720 and 9625, between 1313 and 1500 GMT, Monday through Friday. And the first quarter hour or so on Mondays is the shortwave review with Stephen Fraygood. And did you know that Don Herron is also the performer who portrays Charlie Farquharson on the American TV series Hee-Haw? There have been some reports, originating primarily, I think, with World Broadcast News, that the external service of Radio Ghana is back on the air. A story says after 3 years of silence caused by the breakdown of its transmitters, the country's external service is back. Late last year, the government allotted a total of $12.14 million for the project. When the service was closed, staff was redeployed, and most of the broadcasters serving the French, Portuguese, and Swahili sections has left the country, mostly to join Nigeria's Federal Radio Corporation and the BBC. However, information in world broadcast news seldom seems to be based on actual shortwave monitoring. I don't know of any reports that the external service of Radio Ghana has actually been heard back on the air. The 6130 kilohertz frequency is supposed to have continued without interruption, but the full external service would mean they were back using several much higher frequencies, and some of them to check.
Okay.
Frequencies they used previously were 21545 kilohertz, or was it 21540, I'm not sure, and 15285 kilohertz, for instance, for Radio Ghana's external service. We also have a report from Religious Broadcasting Magazine that another superpower 500 kilowatt shortwave transmitter is under construction. Transworld Radio Monte Carlo is installing the new 500 kilowatt transmitter as part of a major expansion of its Monte Carlo facilities. As a matter of fact, I believe these are actually over the border in France. Incorporating the latest solid-state design features, the new transmitter will feed two new curtain antenna systems supported by three 150-foot towers. Each antenna system permits transmission to three individual target areas and is capable of beaming signals from the existing 100,000-watt shortwave transmitter as well as the new superpower unit. Thanks to Kim McHarg for passing on that information. Some other news about international broadcasting from the pages of the May issue of Review of International Broadcasting, which is being mailed to subscribers around April 28th. Norway. This from Rolf Lövström in Oslo, Norway. The summer schedule of Radio Norway says two new 500 kilowatt transmitters will be tested throughout the summer and fall, though not for North America, due to radiation fears among the locals at the new Kvitsøy site. It also says transmission pattern will be changed before the end of the year to 22 45-minute transmissions a day, rather than 11 90-minute programs. Presumably, this means Norway This Week will also be broadcast 22 times rather than 11 on Sundays. However, it might be shorter. And in Review of International Broadcasting, Sandy Wayne Wilson of Muncie, Indiana says, on May 1st, Saturday night RSA will come to an end. I found that this program is one of the more laid-back ones on Radio RSA, although it did have a subtle political message that South Africa does have international contacts, despite being an international pariah.
There are several shortwave clubs you can join, and other monthly shortwave publications you can get. But out of all of them, there's only one monthly you can get more out of. And that's Review of International Broadcasting. Why? Because RIB offers new shortwave listeners and the X's a chance to catch up with what's going on in shortwave. And offers the veteran enthusiasts a chance to voice an opinion. Review of International Broadcasting is the monthly Bible for every shortwave DXer and listener. Review of International Broadcasting offers you shortwave program guides, pickup and frequency schedules, receiver profiles, and much more. Review of International Broadcasting, edited and published by Glenn Hauser. For 12 issues by First Class Mail in North America, $15. Elsewhere, $16. That's Review of International Broadcasting, Box 6287, Knoxville, Tennessee, 37914-0287. Review of International Broadcasting from Glenn Hauser, Box 6287, Knoxville, Tennessee, 37914-0287.
Thank you, Crazy Roger of Radio Confusion. Now a couple of items about equipment suppliers. Radio West is back in business, according to Don Erickson in California. He says Radio West was to reopen on Monday, April 19th. They have the same phone number and the previous address, that is 714-741-2891. The address of Radio West, Grant Manning, 3417 Pura Road, P-U-R-E-R, Escondido, California, 92025.
And we also have news of an equivalent to Radio West in Western Canada. It's called Shortwave Horizon. We've received this notice from Don Moman in Edmonton, Alberta. Shortwave Horizons is an entirely one-person operation with the purpose of providing a variety of shortwave equipment, both stock and modified versions, to the Canadian SWL. He says it can be tough buying shortwave equipment here in Canada. If you've ever bought equipment, you've probably experienced one or more of the following problems. In Canada, first of all, who sells shortwave listening gear? In most cases, it's your local ham radio dealer, which is run and staffed by and for hams. They all too often know very little about our hobby and our special needs. And the same goes for most Radio Shack stores. And the department store clerk who answers all your questions with, you know, this little beauty can pick up Radio Moscow. You've all experienced that, I'm sure. If you'll take the plunge and order from the USA, you can open up a whole new area of hassle, the shipping problem. Between our two countries' postal systems, there exist many possibilities for something to go wrong. I've had too many such hassles and have heard of many more. If what you ordered is not serviced here, you must send it back for repairs. Good luck. Shortwave Horizons is set up to eliminate these hassles. Firstly, I've been in the radio hobby since I was knee-high to the tuning dial of an HRO. Well, almost. In between time for shortwave listening, I managed to pick up a degree in electrical engineering and make a living as an electronics technician. So I feel quite confident in my ability to handle the technical side of the hobby. I'm also quite active in several shortwave listening clubs, in particular the Canadian International DX Club, where I edit several columns in addition to being the executive secretary. And Don Moman continues, at present, Shortwave Horizons is carrying Panasonic, Kenwood, and Yaesu shortwave equipment, as well as a small selection of used gear. We are also looking at getting the MFJ line and Japan Radio NRD 515 with the new 96-channel memory. The new Yaesu FRA 7700 active antenna has been ordered, and I expect them here in a month or two. With the exception of Sony and Drake, that covers most of the popular shortwave sets. Don Moman says, I am attempting to keep a couple or more of everything in stock. So far, that seems to be nearly impossible to do. Demand seems to be greater than supply, but that's life. I suggest that if you're interested in a particular piece of gear, to phone first to check stock. If I don't have one, I'll say so. None of this, yes we do, and then no we don't, when you place your order. That's happened to me too many times. As far as shipping methods, I try not to use the postal system whenever possible. Small stuff can go by mail, but larger equipment will be shipped by a courier service. Air Express, with a 1 or 2 day delivery to your door, is available for a small charge. I've used a variety of equipment, and there has always been something that could have been improved upon on each set. A modern receiver must appeal to a variety of tastes, and generally that means performance is compromised in order to be competitive. Inexpensive ceramic filters are used. Easy-to-tune broadband front ends are making RF and mixer stage deficiencies more noticeable. I'm presently working on modifications to improve these areas of performance. Improved selectivity through better ceramic and mechanical filters is in the works. Experimentation with improved mixer stages using VHF, VLOS sets, and diode ring passive designs is in progress. Stay tuned for more details as they happen. That's a newsletter from Shortwave Horizons, dated in March, headed by Don Moman. And I think he's only wanting to do business with Canadians, especially those in Western Canada. Here's the address of Shortwave Horizons. Donald Moman, M-O-M-A-N, 6815 12th Avenue, Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Postal code T6K3J6. The phone number, area code 403-462-2198. Shortwave Horizon, 6815 12th Avenue, Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, T6K3J6. Phone 403-462-2198. And good luck to Don Moman and Shortwave Horizon, suppliers of shortwave radios and accessories in Western Canada. Sony has put out a new book called Directory of World Band Radio, most of it written by yours truly. It's been difficult to find so far at Sony dealers where it is being distributed, But Rufus Jordan in Pennsylvania has found out a way to order the book by mail. And here are the details, according to Rufus Jordan. He says it's possible to order the book directly from the Sony National Parts Center in Kansas City. The address is Sony Parts Center, P.O. Box 20407, Kansas City, Missouri, X4195. When ordering, you must specify the following part number, which is T as in Tango, -999-112-11, and the title, Directory of World Band Radio. The part number again is T-999-112-11. Their phone number is 816-891-7550. That's area code 816-891-7550. The cost payable in check or money order is $7.95 U.S., and it includes postage and handling. Allow 5 to 7 days for delivery in the United States. According to a local Sony distributor in the Pittsburgh area, the directory was not to be received by the distributor until sometime in May, and then it's up to the local dealers as to whether or not each dealership opts to buy the book and make it available to the public. Once again, the address of the Sony Parts Center in Kansas City, where you can order Directory of World Band Radio, is P.O. Box 20407, Kansas City, Missouri, 64195. I'll have some more miscellaneous news items in a few minutes. Last week, you may recall that I mentioned briefly Radio Solidarity, and there have been lots of press reports about this clandestine station, which went on the air April 12th for about 8 minutes on VHF in Warsaw, 70.1 megahertz. Their next broadcast has been announced for April 30th at 9 p.m. Warsaw time, and it just might be possible to DX this if you are somewhere in Europe, say, within 2,500 kilometers of Warsaw, in case a sporadic E opening happens at that time. I think for historical reasons, it would be interesting to listen to a considerable excerpt of that first Radio Solidarity broadcast, thanks to Bob Foxworth of CBS News, who supplied us this tape. It's about 5 minutes of the 8 minutes total. Even though most of us don't understand Polish, I think it will be of historical interest to listen to Radio Solidarity. The identification signal, by the way, is one used by the Polish resistance against the Nazis back in World War II.
Niech mi jak drugi dzień świąt Wielkiej Nocy. Rodziny zebrały się przy świątecznych stołach i na chwilę zapomnieliśmy, że żyjemy w kraju, w którym toczy się wojna. Wojna, którą władzę wypowiedział własnemu narodowi. Wojna ta pochłonęła i pochłania dalsze ofiary. Za świątecznym stołem nie zasiedli wiadycy głowniczych kopalni bujek i więzienia przeżywa ciągle ponad 4000 osób. Nieprawdą jest, że internowanie to coś innego niezwykłe więzienie. Ciągle dochodzą do nas wiadomości o kolejnych pozycjach w obozach internowanych, na przykład w Wierzchowie i w Łodawie, czy w aresztach śledczych. W areszcie śledczym na Mokotowie przeżywa skazowany student z 4 roku Akademii Teologii Katolickiej, Matyńczuk. Chociaż w czasie przesłuchań został pobity tak, że nastąpiło pęknięcie śledziony, a życie jego zagraża niebezpieczeństwo, zamiast przyjść go do szpitala, przysłuchuje się go i żyje nadal. Pamiętajmy o tym, kiedy wmawia się w nas, że życie ulega normalizacji, że żyjemy w spokoju, w wyższych racji musimy pogodzić się z czasami pogardy. Nie może być normalizacji w kraju, w którym są dzieci i nie żyje więzieni, w którym podeptane są prawa ludzkie. Zgoda na taką normalizację jest zdradą własnego sumienia, jest zatrzymanie. Musimy walczyć o uwolnienie więzionych, o przywrócenie godności ludzkiej, o odrodzenie naszego związku. Taką walką podejmuje nasza radiostacja i taką walką powinien prowadzić w miarę swoich możliwości każdy i wszyscy Polak.
That was Radio Solidarity, with an ID at the very last. Athens radio hoax backfires. That's our April Fool's story from the New York Times, forwarded by Fabio Borberini. Dateline Athens, April 2nd. Greece's state-controlled national radio network has been sued, and its director has submitted his resignation after an April Fool's Day news broadcast that called for the evacuation of the city center because pollution had reached emergency levels. The broadcast caused serious panic, a government spokesman said. The spokesman, Dimitrios Maroudas, said he had refused to accept the resignation of the network's director, the playwright Jakob Kambanelis. But he has dismissed Irene Psareli, the head of the program involved and the originator of the hoax. Mr. Maroudas said the broadcast caused serious panic among the public. The broadcast, made early Thursday but retracted within 3 hours, said the government had called on all schools in Athens to close and children to be sent home because of the dangerous pollution levels. It called on the public to stop their cars wherever they were and to head for open ground. The broadcast was taken seriously by many because the government announces traffic restrictions and a cutback in industrial production whenever pollution in Athens approaches emergency levels. An architect, Themistocles Mihos, sued the network for $820,000 as compensation for mental distress he said the broadcast caused him and his family. The Athens prosecutor's office said Mr. Mihos' wife had suffered shock while trying to escape from the city. You've been listening to World of Radio, a program primarily about the dynamic medium of international shortwave broadcasting. For our free information sheet on DX and shortwave listening, send a long, self-addressed stamped envelope to World of Radio, Box 6287, Knoxville, Tennessee, 37914. This is Glenn Hauser.